From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Scott Cate figures he put $5 million into the Cottonwood High School football program over the years. Cate made a fortune in telecommunications, and he wanted to help out, so he volunteered as a coach, and he started paying for stuff. A turf field, a press box, a new weight room. But last spring, the Granite School District worried about how that money was being documented and whether it was giving the school an unfair advantage, put in place much stricter rules about donating to sports programs. Cate ultimately decided to withdraw his support, and the Cottonwood story itself is interesting. The part Cate played in inspiring young people versus the role he played in amping up the arms race in school sports. That's the bigger issue, whether high school athletics is becoming big business. Today in the program, we're talking about the questions in this story. Is athletics overshadowing academics, and what role is it supposed to play in public education? After the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about sports in high school. For years, Scott Cate, who is a wealthy businessman, had been pumping millions of dollars into the Cottonwood High School football program. He says he paid upward of $5 million into that program over the 13 years he was involved. Well, last year, the Granite School District put an end to all of that. A state audit uncovered widespread problems with how high schools in the state manage the money and document the money. And it revealed some surprising results in some ways that this really is a big business for many schools in Utah and around the country. And it's raising some questions that we want to talk about today. We invite you to join the conversation. What role does or should sports play in public education? What role would you like to see some changes in how sports are integrated in education? And, of course, the question of whether or not high school sports has become sort of outsized. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'd also like to hear from those of you on Facebook and on Twitter. Lisa Shanker is joining us first on the program. She covers education and religion for the Salt Lake Tribune, but she's also covered this story a bit. And Lisa, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, I want to go through the basics of the story first of all so we can sort of have a jumping off point to talk about those broader questions that I was asking. Let's start this way. Who is Scott Cate? I mean, I guess I gave a sort of basic outline, but talk about Scott Cate and the role that he played, because this is sort of the jumping off point for raising all these questions.
Sure. He made his fortune with a business he owned, and then he sold it. And a couple of his kids went to Cottonwood High School. At some point, he became involved in Cottonwood High School about 10, 12 years ago, and he began donating a lot of money to the program and a lot of time. He worked as the offensive coordinator for the team for up until this past summer.
He says he spent, as I mentioned, something like $5 million on what?
He spent a lot of it on sports. I mean, well, all of it on vast majority on sports, as far as we can tell. There were some really big ticket items like new turf for the football field and a press box. But there were also a lot of things that were smaller and maybe undocumented even over the years.
I want to bring another voice into the conversation. Kyle Goon is with us. He works at the Salt Lake Tribune. He's on the sports beat there covering it. He's been covering this story as well. He's probably out of breath as we get him in here. Kyle, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Talking about Scott Cate, of course. And I guess the question is, what did Scott Cate get for his money? What was the result of the money that he's been spending on that district over time?
You mean for himself?
Not really for himself. I guess for the program itself. What did that money do for the Cottonwood program? I mean, it's interesting. They haven't yet won a state title.
Mm-hmm.
So what is he getting for that money?
I think probably the measure of success that he would most point to is the kids who got Division I scholarships. We found at least 32, 33 kids We got Division I scholarships, and out of the previous something like 20 years, there had only been one or two. So I think Scott would say we made a program that gave a lot of kids college futures and college educations. What they did with it was kind of their own deal.
But I think he's saying, I'm not buying a state championship. I'm doing something more. I'm doing this for the benefit of the kids. I'm doing this for the benefit of building character, those kinds of things. That's how he sort of has talked about it.
Yeah. In his view, what he did was, some people would say, his detractors would say, he made it about money. What he saw it as was kind of, in essence, liberating the program from the concerns of money, from, kids having to go out and fundraise with car washes and things like that. And that's kind of how he would identify with it.
He also said that he was trying to sort of rid the program of these meddling parents. I mean, there's the irony in there. He was saying that, all these parents were sticking their nose in the program, and he said, well, I'll end all of that. I'll just fund it myself.
Exactly. I think part of it is that he didn't want to be told how to run the program by parents or pretty much anybody else. And so sort of with his wallet, he kind of made it so he could run it how he saw fit.
Yeah.
And, and there were other coaches too. But
of course,
he certainly had a lot of power.
So back in June of last year, the Granite School District instituted these new rules where help me out with this, Lisa. They put a cap of $499 on the amount of money any one person can donate to the program and serve in a decision-making capacity.
Correct.
Yeah. And then they also said if you're going to give more than $10,000, that has to be approved by the superintendent of the district.
Right.
And anything over $50,000 has to be approved by not just the superintendent, but the board
right.
of the district in general.
Yes.
And I guess the question is, why the rule change? Why did they finally decide, well, because this has been going on for, Kate had been at Cottonwood for some 13 years. Why now did they decide to change the rules?
I think this all started back with TempView. Lewis Wong ran into some trouble there. They found that there was some mismanagement of money going on. And when that happened, I think a lot of people in education across the state, it opened their eyes to the fact that a lot of these people on the ground level, their coaches, their volunteers, their parents, they weren't trained how to handle money. They just didn't know in a lot of cases what they were supposed to be doing with it. And in light of that, Granite started examining its own program. And I think they found they had a lot of the same issues, a lot of the same concerns. When I asked the superintendent in Granite why now with this policy that prohibits donors after a certain amount from making decisions, he said it wasn't directed at Scott Kate. He said it was more that there were problems throughout the district of donors wielding influence that they shouldn't be, and this was to address all of that.
Kyle, this is Martin Bates, the superintendent
right.
of Granite, said it wasn't directed at Scott Kate. And we'll take him on his word, but didn't they also mention didn't they go out of their way to thank Scott Kate in the process of making the announcement of the
Yeah, and that was
change?
Kind of the thing that didn't make sense to some people who saw the decision, including us. I mean, they said specifically, and at the time when we called them up, we asked specifically about Scott Kate, and they said the same thing, that it wasn't about Scott. But in the same email that they said we're considering these new rules, it said, we understand that it will specifically affect the Kate family, Scott and Michelle, who have given so generously over the years. We want to thank them for what they gave to the Granite School District and, et cetera, et cetera. So they, in some sense, they wanted to say, it does affect everyone across the board, but they knew it would have a specific effect on Cottonwood and Scott. And I just want to point out the irony that, when Scott first got into it, he didn't want, donors being able to dictate the standards of his program, and then Granite School District makes a rule, and to kind of make that a a granite rule, and suddenly that pushes him out. And that was kind of interesting how that all worked and how it kind of came about. And obviously it was painful for a lot of people who really still supported Scott.
Yeah. So. It's interesting. I wonder, Lisa, there was this statewide audit, this statewide investigation. You filed a grandma request to get documentation on some of these donations. What essentially did you find? I mean, are there a lot of Scott Cates out there in programs? I know they focused on four particular programs, so it's hard to make any sort of broad come to any broad conclusions. But are there a lot of people spending a lot of money like that on football programs across the state?
In the four schools they examined, they didn't mention – the auditors didn't mention any really large donors. But then they didn't really mention Scott Cate either in the audit. They just mentioned what he had donated. But they did – the conclusion – one of the conclusions of the audit was essentially we found problems in all four of these schools with how money is handled, how donations are handled. And if we found them in these four schools, we would expect to find them almost everywhere.
Yeah. So Granite's changed its policy. Are you seeing any changes anywhere else?
Yes. The state has been working on a rule for a few months, and they're still working on it, that would ask districts to create their own policies addressing all of these things, all sorts of financial aspects of activities and sports. And they also – the state held some trainings a few months ago for school volunteers and employees around the state. So I think the state has really realized that there's a lot of confusion in this area, and they're attempting to make it much clearer for everyone involved.
So they found sloppy finances. They found, you know, poor oversight. But anything criminal or dangerous, anything more troubling than that? I mean, not that that's not troubling, but did they find anything that seemed, you know, really criminal, really any – I know there were some questions about when Scott Cate, for example, was helping to build different things on campus, whether they were going through the right sort of safety procedures and stuff like that. But I wonder, did they find anything that was particularly disturbing, or just that they were having a hard time keeping track of all of this money?
I think it was more of the latter, more of just having a hard time keeping track of things. Like there was one example in the audit, and I don't remember from which school, but of a teacher or a coach who had – there were like $1,200 missing from a program, and they realized that he had forgotten about the checks in a drawer of his desk. Just that kind of thing. You know, it wasn't criminal. It didn't seem to be on purpose, but he had just left them in his desk and forgotten about them for a year.
So I guess it sort of gets us to the question of and we're going to spend some time talking about this, but what's so wrong with what Scott Cate did? I mean, he says he was trying to give young men of in some cases difficult circumstances an opportunity. He was trying to teach lessons about character and about work ethic. I mean, he paid for tutors for some players. And he says it was just kind of his way of giving back to the community. And he said, Kyle, you quoted Scott Cate in one of your articles saying this. He said, if there's a nefarious underpinning here, where is the thing I'm supposed to be, you know, where is this thing I'm supposed to be getting? So what's wrong with what Scott Cate did? Have you been able to sort of assess what the problem is there?
Yeah, I mean, I had a bunch of conversations with Scott for this story, and I guess one of the things that you know, Scott didn't understand or at least accept, but it's sort of, you know, we talked about how he had that power and how he, you know, in many ways ran the program himself and apart from district guidelines. And I think on a certain level, if you're the Granite School District, you have to kind of trust that Scott's doing everything that, you know, for a good reason, you know, and, you know, maybe he was this, you know, wonderful guy and who's given selflessly. But it's at the same time, if you're the school district, you kind of have to have some faith that this is for an altruistic purpose, because not only are we talking about giving money to kids and for facilities, but I think a big issue for Granite was, you know, paying assistance, you know, and not just – I mean, it would be – you know, what he said is I paid a couple assistants a couple thousand dollars a year doesn't seem like much, but it kind of helps him get around and makes ends meet. And also, but he also provides scholarships, quote unquote, for their educations and for additional degrees. And at some point, you know, there's a lot of loyalty built up to Scott, not to necessarily Cottonwood, not to necessarily Granite School District. And I think that was definitely an issue. And they asked him to stop paying assistance and he wouldn't. So, you know, and that's sort of where there's a strong divergence where Scott sees it as, well, I'm doing this wonderful thing and I'm helping people, which in many ways he was. But it's also, you know, there's some ethical questions that come with it.
Yeah. You write that there was this joke that if you played well, Kate would fly you on these recruiting trips and go to these camps. But if you messed up in a game, as you put it, the player was off the plane. And you get a sense that it was partly tongue-in-cheek, but did it matter that you won? Did it matter that you played well? I mean, was that part of the give and take?
That was the whole give and take. I mean, it's pretty much, you know, the players who were playing well or at least kind of giving all the effort they had and had talent would get a lot of those benefits, which included, you know, Scott would go to bat on your behalf to college coaches. He would help you out by sending you to camps. And, I mean, how he laid it out was, you know, I would have these demands of you to that you had to meet. You know, you had to be at every practice. You had to be at every weightlifting. You had to have your grades set. But if you did your part of it, then Scott would come through with his part of it. And his part of it was making sure his kids got exposure. You know, you look at somebody like E.C. Sofili, who went on to University of California, where he became the starting running back. And Scott was telling me, you know, part of that was me kind of going, and he's like a 5'8 kid.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, went to bat for E.C., and it kind of worked out for him. And I'm not sure if he's going to have an NFL career, but certainly had a great college career. So that's kind of the description of the deals he had with players, but players who didn't meet that criteria kind of got left.
They had to be elite athletes.
Yeah, part of it was, and part of the other part of it was the best players play, and there were kind of no debates about that. If the kid was gonna play better than the next kid behind him, in Scott. That was going to be the end-all, be-all.
Did you get a sense he was recruiting players?
That in particular.
Like directly recruiting players? Like, 'cause that's a big question, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that is a big question. I think, you know, it's more so than Scott's direct influence. Probably the draw of the program itself was its success in not creating college players, but also its facilities and its uniforms. And
so there was an indirect kind of appeal to the program.
I would say that was the main appeal. Basically, you know, once people, I think I had this in the article, where people saw Stanley Havili go to college and eventually go to the NFL, and I had a bunch of coaches tell me that was sort of the moment when a lot of kids said, okay, if Stanley Havili did it, you know, I can do it. Parents said, my kid can do it. And at that point, because of open enrollment, you know, parents can kind of make their own determinations.
Let me ask you this. So let's say that I am a really – or my kid is a really great quarterback, or at least I think he is. You know, he's six something, you know, he's got what I think are prospects. And yet the school district I'm in, it's a crappy football program. Like they never win. They're not that good. I don't think much of the coach. So what do I do to get him into Cottonwood? What do I get him to do to get him into Timpview? Can I just decide to have him do that? It can just based on my concern for sports, can my child go to another school? Under the rules.
It can't be
that
just
can't be
your
the
concern.
Reason.
But there are circumstances which allow that, and people try to exploit that. And the biggest one, I would say now, under the current rules, is the full family move, where if you move your whole family into that district, it's a done deal. You're pretty much always going to get approved unless there's someone raises an accusation that you've been recruited. That's really hard to prove. Basically, if you have a full family move, you're going to get approved. So you see a lot of people kind of move their whole – uproot their whole families, especially people with the means to do that. And the other one is hardship, which is usually a problem that can't be solved. So you could say my kid's been bullied or my kid had some incident at school or there's this incident that our family's dealing with. And some people – I mean a lot of people genuinely have those kind of problems that where they need to move schools and start over, but not everyone does.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I'll see as a reporter, kind of people trying to do to maneuver around that.
So what happened to the rest of the schools in – let's just talk about Cottonwood in particular. What happened to the rest of the schools in that region? Because I guess the argument could be with all this money being pumped into the, you know, the Cottonwood system, that the other schools – the other programs that are competing against them are at an unfair disadvantage. Is that argument being made, I guess?
It was a big argument for a long time. People in kind of competing school districts, especially at the time in Highland, the coach would accuse Scott of recruiting, and a lot of people in that area were saying it created an unfair balance. A lot of people were happy to see Scott go. For that respect, because, you know, the way Scott saw it was, you know, I'm kind of having other people, I'm kind of forcing the level of play up. And, you know, he saw it as when he, you know, built a new field at Cottonwood, other districts and schools followed and people kind of stepped up and donors stepped up and realized they had to, kind of do the same things to compete.
And
that did happen, but also not everyone has Scott Cate. So it's definitely difficult to level the playing field. And at that point, you're asking yourself, is the point of athletics in high schools to kind of that conquest, or is it more educational?
Yeah.
And that's part of the crux of the debate, I think.
Yeah, that's the bigger question. We're going to get to that when we get back from a break. Lisa, let me ask you this finally. Do you get a sense because of this audit, because of the Scott Cate situation, because of the concerns in Tempview, for example, do you get a sense we're going to see some sort of broader changes to programs now? Is it going to change significantly? Are they really going to be able to limit the amount of money that, you know, rich donors want to give to these high school programs?
I don't know if it's so much that donors are going to be vastly limited, but I do think there'll be a lot of changes in the sense that everything will be much more clearly spelled out. Districts will have to have policies. They'll have to have rules. They're going to have procedures for all this. There's not – the idea once all these changes go through is that there can't be another situation where a donor gives – maybe $5 million to a school, and we're not really sure where it all went or exactly how it was used. There's going to have to be much more documentation.
But wait, so they don't care that they got $5 million from Scott Cate. They just want to make sure we account for it properly. So that's not going to end. I guess the question is, do they care that it seems unfair to other programs? One program has Scott Cate. Look, as long as we do the accounting right, you can give $5 million, Scott Cate. That's fine. You can buy a turf field. You can, as long as it goes through the right procedures, as long as we know where the money's going, do they care about that fairness question? Do they care about that competition question? Or are they only concerned about keeping track of the money?
You know, I haven't heard anyone talking about wanting to limit donors, maybe because this situation is so unusual. There's not a lot of people dying to give $5 million to a sports program. I think it's just trying to go through the right procedures. I think from the state's perspective, the State Office of Education, the State School Board, they're trying to keep employees and coaches and volunteers and parents from getting themselves in trouble by mishandling money and not documenting where things are going.
Yeah.
And I think the thing to add is, no school district is going to say, don't give us money. But the trade-off now for donors, and I think the message is very clear, is that you can give us money, but don't expect it to be used necessarily exactly how you want it to be used.
Don't expect to be the offensive coordinator for the football team.
That too.
Yeah. Okay. Kyle Kuhn is with us on the sports beat at the Salt Lake Tribune. Lisa Shanker covers education and religion, in this case sports, for the Salt Lake Tribune also. Thanks very much for being with us. Lisa, Kyle, stay with us. When we get back from a break, we're going to talk about those bigger questions that Kyle brought up. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the role that athletics is supposed to be playing in public education. We invite you to join the conversation, 801-585-WEST, our number, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We have Kyle Kuhn with us, a sports reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. And joining us now is Douglas Hartman. He is a professor of sociology at the University of Minnesota, where he teaches classes on sports and society. He also conducts research on sports in contemporary American societies. Joining us by phone from the campus of the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. And Douglas Hartman, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let me ask you broadly, we'll sort of pick through this in the particulars as we go, but broadly, what do you make of this, like this one case, and what you think it may reflect more broadly about what's going on in athletics and education and public education?
Well, I think you guys have been talking a lot about the donor aspect. I'd probably put that in a little bit broader context about the increasing amount of money and attention that we give to high school sports at the elite levels, and both in terms of the money we spend on it, but also in terms of the public attention that it gets, interest that it has. Those are just, have really, really taken off in the last couple of decades.
You know, it raises the question of the purpose of sports in these high schools. And I guess the question is, has it ever really been detached from the bigger business of sports, in professional leagues or even in college? Has there ever been a detachment? Was there ever kind of this pure moment in public education in high school football programs in this country?
I think there probably was, but probably more important, I think we want to wish or think that there had been a lot more of those moments, a lot more of that time. At the same time, recognizing that there's always been a kind of a financial aspect to it and a pretty high level interest and commitment, I think the relative balance of that really has shifted in recent years, and the kind of amount of resources, amount of time and energy that those in athletic departments are putting into the high school sports, I think that has really increased and intensified in recent years.
I guess, what do you think is wrong, if you think anything's wrong with what Scott Kate did, for example? I mean, don't you want these engaged, boosters giving money and attention to your program?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, I don't know much about the specifics of this particular individual or case. In and of itself, it doesn't necessarily sound like the worst case ever. I think the larger questions are about, how much money we want to put to high school sports, who puts that money in, what kind of oversights and controls there are on those sports programs and those donors. And then the big one is, what's the role or relationship of those programs to the, educational academic mission of the schools?
Well, let's take on that latter question that you ask. How is it supposed to work? What is the role that athletics is supposed to play in educational institutions?
Well, we've got a long history in this country of believing and wanting to see sport being a positive educational force in our schools, whether it's, character building, socialization, social development, health and fitness, even more traditional academic program concerns in terms of keeping kids in school, providing good role models. All those things are great ideals, and in the right context, that often is what happens. But the other thing that's really clear when you kind of study this stuff and you research on it is sports is a real powerful force for education high schools, but it could be really positive or really negative.
Yeah.
And I could give examples of that. But the key thing is it's not automatic that sport is a positive educational force. We want to believe it is. It can be. But it has to be made that way, and that's not an easy or automatic thing.
Well, talk more about that, because this is you've done some studying on that correlation between the academic success of young people and their involvement in sports. And as you say, you found that sports can be measurable. You can measure that it can be a good thing. But as you said, it's complicated. When is it good, and when is it not good?
Well, we could talk about that at an individual level or a more institutional or school level. Let me give you an example of the latter that comes from a classic piece of research by a sociologist named James Coleman about high school culture in the 1960s. And he was studying a lot of schools around the country and found two where sports was a really important thing. And one was the football program was great. Another was the wrestling program was great. But they had really different impacts on the schools in the football context. And it wasn't because it was football, it was because of the coach. The coach really put a lot of emphasis on winning games, but he was particularly inattentive to the academic culture of his athletes and their role in the school. And it turned out that the program had a negative impact on the academic culture of the school. Conversely, the wrestling coach was a great teacher, very committed to academics, both for his athletes and his students, and used his prominence as coach, the success of his team, to really contribute to the school culture and spirit, not just around sports, but around their academic values and mission. So this is a great kind of illustration to me of the kind of dual-sided character or nature of sport, where it's a powerful force. It could be really positive for the academic curriculum, or it could be a negative, but it really depends on who's running the show and how it's balanced with the scholarly side.
So there has to be kind of a holistic approach for it to work out properly.
Well, a holistic approach, or really an understanding of the role of sports in the schools, the balance between academics and athletics. And I think the danger that we're facing as high school sport becomes more expensive, more time-consuming, we're more oriented toward wanting to see excellence and victories, is that balance gets skewed.
So is the problem in how we define success? If we're just defining it on a win or a loss, that's a problem.
Absolutely. Our ideals about sport being an educational, contributing to the educational mission of being a powerful force for learning and teaching and socialization, those ideals have almost nothing to do usually with winning and losing. It's about character. It's about development. It's about health and fitness. Winning and losing is kind of the last thing that usually is in play when we talk about those ideals, yet that's increasingly what people are most oriented to and focused on.
Mm. Kagun, let me ask you, I don't want to keep bringing it back to Scott Cate, because again, his is just sort of a jumping off point for a bigger question, but this does raise the question of what it was that Scott Cate wanted. I mean, he wanted, and the reason he was focused on elite athletes in these programs is because he wanted them to win.
Yeah, if you look at their record, basically they during the Scott Cate era, they won more games in 8 years than they had in the previous 25. And I think part of it was definitely about winning games, and I think that's one of the reasons. Now, I did mention that he had detractors, parents who, basically cheered the end of the era, but while Cottonwood was winning, when they went to state championships, and they did go to state championships, yeah, they didn't win, but that a lot of the criticism was kind of more or less shut down because they were so successful and because kids were going to college. That was a big part of it.
And I guess it raises the question also, Douglas Hartman, about who it is that's benefiting. I mean, Kyle is mentioning that there were those who, Scott Cate helped get recruitment films put together, got them into these big D1 programs. You have, in one case, a kid ends up in the NFL, the Philadelphia Eagles. But it seems like the big question is, what's happening to the rest? I mean, you're really focusing on, there are those, those few, but what about the rest of them? The bigger question: who really, or how many really are benefiting?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great sociology question for someone like that's my profession and field, which is always about what's happening to most of us or the most largest percentage of kids, and that's actually really what I'd be interested here. And it's easy to focus on the couple of success stories or even the 20 or 30 scholarship kids, but what happens to everybody else, either who's on the team or who are in the school? But even the scholarship kids, like what happens, what's their story? How much of a scholarship did they get? What did they do with that? A lot of times we kind of don't ask those hard questions about what's happening, what are these programs kind of producing for what the cost and the time is. And it's easy to focus on, the wins and losses or, again, a couple of success stories. But it's a lot more kids that we're talking about here, both kids that want to play sports as well as kids that are in those schools.
Here's a comment from Donna, who writes, "What does Scott Cate get out of it? Power," she writes. "Power, prestige, influence, control. He's not running a private business. This is a private institution. There were payoffs for him, the power, the control, the influence. If these payoffs were not his original inspiration, they certainly were the result. Somewhere along the line, he realized what was going on. People aren't immune to their own actions or consequences." Here's an email from Stephanie, who writes, "I had a history teacher who was also a wrestling coach. He did not interact with the class for the entire semester. He wrote assignments on the board, selected a student to hand them out, and then grade and return the tests." She writes, "I cared about history. Several of us skipped class almost weekly to complain to the administration, who seemed unconcerned. There also seems to be a problem with poor teachers who are hired to coach, then quit coaching and remain as poor teachers. Education," she writes, "should never be subordinate to sports." Let me ask you, Douglas Hartman, how do you react to that? Is this a problem that goes on in a lot of places where is this a relatively new phenomenon?
Well, are you talking about the donor problem or the coach?
No, the question of whether or not education has become subordinate to sports, as Stephanie puts it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's an age-old problem about finding that proper balance. I do think it's important not to focus on, one isolated case, whether it's a good case or a bad case, and rather the larger system. And, largely, I'd say an awful lot of great high school educators or great coaches think of their job as one and the same.
Right.
I would say that one of the problems with some of the moves towards more independent high school sports programs is you have a lot more coaches and people involved with the program who aren't trained as educators, who aren't teachers in the schools, and that makes it even harder, I think, to maintain an appropriate balance between sports and education.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Let's take a call from Richard, who's joining us in Salt Lake. Richard, welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
What I would like to say is I was a science teacher for 32 years in Granite School District, and I could build a mighty good science program with $5 million, and it's just offensive the way that sports gets the attention and important things such as science are disregarded. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was going to say, I'd second that. I think an awful lot of people, but what really upsets them is not just the amount of money spent on sports, but that this is happening even when a lot of school districts are under tremendous financial pressures, having to make cuts in other, other academic realms. And that just seems so counterproductive, counterintuitive, and, against the mission of the school. So, I think that's What your caller just said is a very common refrain from a lot of folks who maybe even be sports supporters, but they don't see the balance there.
Douglas Hartman is a professor of sociology at the University of Minnesota, and Kyle Goon is a sports reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the role that athletics is supposed to be playing in public education. Here's an email from Jen, who writes, "The issue of private donations to public school sports programs highlights the chronic funding shortages for Utah schools. Public schools, she writes, need better state support without the distortions that come from donors dictating which specific school benefits from their largesse and the risk of taxpayers picking up the tab for poorly constructed capital projects. Returning progressivity to the Utah tax code, she says, and capping charitable donations and raising the gas tax to fully fund roads without stealing from schools would be a start. 801-585-WEST, again, the number to join the conversation. There's another twist to this story that I wanted to ask you about, Kyle Goon, and then Douglas Hartman, you've written some about this, or at least I think you've been thinking about this, and this is the question of upward mobility, where you have students who are disadvantaged because of they're at risk, or they have challenges at home, or you know they're impoverished in some cases. Scott, Kate, and others say they helped some of these disadvantaged kids, for example, Kyle, some of them Polynesian kids, for example. But others are saying, this comes up in some of the reporting that you guys were doing, that these kids were in some ways were being exploited.
That's a tricky one. I think if you look at a lot of successful programs, with some variations, a lot of successful programs in the state have Polynesian players. I think that was something, I'm not sure how it shook out exactly in the Cottonwood program. Some people, felt, and we talked to at least one person who felt like his nephew was exploited. But, players who got scholarships out of it, who got college careers out of it, tended to be very grateful to Scott for kind of giving them a chance. And I think Stanley in particular, said, if I hadn't gone to Cottonwood, things might have been very different for me. Maybe I would have been hanging out with some friends I should have been hanging out with. I'm not knowledgeable enough to say if that would be the case, but he went out of his way to say, going to Cottonwood changed my life for the better.
Yeah. And so Douglas Hartman, why not? What's so wrong with that? With this being a sort of one of those sort of methods to get ahead in life, sport.
Yeah, I mean, obviously sport has been that for a lot of individuals in our society, but I especially thinking in a sociological context, it's easy to focus on the individual successes, and we have to think also about the larger collective costs and what's happening to the vast majority of kids and young people. And so, that's what I, want to think about is how many minority kids are in the school districts and what's happening for them, but also especially how many of those kids are trying to play sports, trying to take that superstar route, trying to be one of the kids that gets the scholarship, and don't make it, and then what? Because if there's educational programs that kind of come in and help those kids use their athletic interests to channel them into education, that's a great thing. But if they're just kind of left to fall off the map, if they're not the superstar athletes, then you've not only not helped them, you might have made, really, really hurt them in some ways by holding up these possibilities for scholarships that really are only a few of the most unique, exceptional individuals are going to be able to take advantage of.
801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Let's go back to the phones. Tammy is with us in Harriman, Utah. Tammy, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
My comment is I graduated from high school 25 years ago, and as a female athlete, our coach didn't cut us any slack. He had high expectations academically, and he said, yeah, you're playing, but you knew going in that you were going to have to still keep up your grades. He expected that. It really irritated me that the same didn't apply to the boys. A lot of them were given a pass because they played the sport and they did well. But academically, I really feel like it was a disadvantage. If the coach pushed them academically and required them to do well, then it was a great asset. It kept kids in school that wouldn't have stayed, that would have dropped out. But when the coach didn't have that expectation, I think it was a severe disadvantage. And I agree with what your last person said, but also the science teacher who called and said, you know, I could do a lot with $5 million. That's what I feel. You know, we talk a lot in this country about how academics are struggling, but where do we put our money?
Tammy, thanks very much. 801-585-WEST, again, the number to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phone. Seth is with us in Salt Lake. Seth, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me, Doug.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment about, you know, the science teacher and the guest that you have on today. Much of the time we, it's tempting to want to measure all of this in terms of athletic scholarships and how many of these people went on to college. But I think that overlooks the role that athletic plays in terms of character development for these young men and young women. And I was an athlete. I graduated 10 years ago or so, and I feel like my coaches acted as surrogate fathers to me, and much of the time they're building character and teaching these young people principles that stay with you for life. And sure, if you had $5 million, you could develop a lot of a good scientific program, but we are investing in young people, and I think that athletics plays a huge role in terms of building character and teaching lifelong skills and lessons that last for a lifetime.
Yeah.
Douglas, can I jump in on that?
Yeah, please do, yes.
Yeah, I think that's a great an important point to think about character development in athletics, and it kind of goes back to what I was saying before. Sports can be a great place to build character development, and coaches are often crucial in doing that. They're a role model, surrogate father, as your caller mentioned. But I'd also, both people probably have anecdotal stories on this, but the research is also clear that that's not automatic. As many stories as you've got about coaches helping to build character, there's also stories about coaches being characters and doing pretty crazy stuff that can teach kind of skewed values about competition or using your body or how to relate to other people. And the point here is it's not automatic that sports builds character. It depends on how you run the programs. And that's why I think what's really important, you really have to supervise these programs. And when you've got programs that have people funding them that don't accept or allow a degree of supervision, you really, and I'm not saying that this case you've got approaches that at all, but when you have that possibility, you really open yourself up to some of the worst abuses that we see all over the sports world. And, you know, I don't need to go into some of the most recent examples of that. I'm sure your listeners and yourself will think of those.
Yeah.
But again, the point is it can be a great thing, but it can also be a pretty scary thing. So that's why we have to be really careful about how we implement these programs, oversee them, regulate them. And when they get disconnected from the schools, from the academic mission, that's when we usually run into problems.
I was wondering if I might add a comment. I think one thing about athletics that you see is that people who donate, people who give, they can go to the games, they can kind of be on the sideline, celebrate the victories, you know, talk to the athletes, and there's a lot of access and a lot of celebration. I mean, obviously, winning a state championship is very exhilarating for fans and parents and things like that. I think, and maybe that's part of it, where people get excited about giving to athletics and giving to sports. You know, I personally don't think that a scholarship for science is any less exciting for a kid. I think it's probably in many ways more and is a first step in the future. I mean, I was never an athlete and I took an academic scholarship. And I think that, you know, maybe there should be some venue of celebrating that more in this culture. But the way sports is, the nature of it, participation and fandom, there's a lot of excitement, exhilaration around it. And I think that's why you see people giving and people funding multi-million football stadiums in Texas or wherever, and maybe less giving on the academic side.
Ivan raises that question. He writes in from Lehigh. He says, I'm a little shocked. Everyone implies there's something wrong in sports and promoting the elite athletes. It's not appalling how people spend their money, he says. Kate spent money on entertainment. Why aren't people with science degrees giving back to their schools? Just not a bad point.
Well, can I, on that point, I kind of agree. There's nothing wrong with elite sport and training young people to perform at a tremendously high level, whether it's for entertainment or, you know, for national pride in the Olympics, as we saw this summer. I think the biggest problem with that is that that's generally not why we support sports in schools. We support and maintain sports in schools for educational reasons, not for the development of high-level professional athletics. And that's where I think those are two things that we might value, but they don't necessarily get funded and supported in the same way by that single institution.
Seth, glad you called. Thanks very much. Let me, I guess the question is now whether or not there's any turning back, Douglas Hartman. You know, sports has become big business. It's sort of become big business in college. That I don't think there's any going back there. Is there some chance at all of to keep the same thing from happening on the high school level, or does that seem to be where we're headed?
Well, I'd say it does seem to be where we're headed in terms of trends, in terms of funding and attention and time. I don't know that it's irreversible or uncontrollable, but it does mean probably taking some pretty drastic measures to limit donors, limit amounts of money that are spent, maintain oversight and control. And I'd also say, you know, that a lot of what we're seeing take shape, you know, there's a precursor for it, and it's what's happened with colleges and universities, you know, probably starting about 100 years ago. A lot of the same kind of issues and problems that we're talking about at the high school level were in the colleges and universities. And I don't know that they have done a particularly great job of controlling that for the educational purposes. There's a lot of things that are really important about college sports, but mostly they're far more of a business and far more about marketing and branding universities than they are about the education of individual student athletes.
Douglas Hartman, professor of sociology at the University of Minnesota, where he conducts research on sports in America today. Professor Hartman, thanks very much for the time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Kyle Goon is a sports reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. Kyle, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And we invite you to continue the conversation. Go to our website, KUER.org. A lot of people are having something to say about today's program. Radio West, production of KUER News. I'm Doug Fabrizio.